right. Welcome back to the FFV podcast. I hope all is well. Today, I'm bringing you guys another amazing guest, previously at Twitter and Zero X Project, and now the CEO and co-founder of Phantom Wallet. Welcome the legend himself, Brandon Millman. Thanks for hopping on the show, man. How you doing today?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for the intro. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. It's just a huge honor to have you on, obviously, as you're building amazing things in the space. And the intro is insane, man. I was doing my research a couple weeks back, and I was just like, damn, man, this guy's stacked, big brain guy over here, man. And I was also reading your bio on a few other Medium posts, and you got some pretty cool history, man. It's at such a young age too, man. It's like blew my fucking mind, that's for sure, man.
I appreciate that. I don't feel so young nowadays, but definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, man. The space can do that to you, man. I'm telling you. But before we dive deep into Phantom, man, we do a little insight on the guests that come on the show. So with that being said, where are you from and what was it like growing up from Brandon Millman?
I don't know when the last time someone asked me that was, so I need to think about that a bit. I suppose I grew up on the East Coast, New Jersey. Pretty standard childhood, I'd say. Studied hard, got good grades, went to decent college, had a really tight knit group of friends, played a lot of Halo 2, played a lot of StarCraft. Those were the vibes, and yeah. Ended up finding my way over to Silicon Valley eventually.
What was that like? What was that kind of transition? Like what interests you?
Yeah, I mean, both my parents are actually engineers. Mom's a software engineer. Dad is a mechanical engineer. Dang. So I suppose I was always around that kind of environment. And my aunt and uncle, long time San Francisco people, tech people, kind of worked across multiple tech booms and always, I suppose, whispering in my ear about the gold rush of Silicon Valley, so to speak. And so, I found myself kind of predisposed to kind of technology and stuff like that. But then in college, that's when I really got pretty much addicted to building iPhone applications.
Oh, okay.
That was, you know, probably 2009 through 2013.
Well, what kind of apps were you building?
Yeah, just a lot of toy stuff. A lot of hackathon type of stuff.
Nice.
We were doing little apps where, let's say, you had like an iPad that was sitting on the desk, and it would kind of be actually a little bit ahead of its time, but it would be sitting on your desk, and it would just kind of listening to what you were talking about, and then like posting links about or like pictures of like kind of like the keywords that it would pick up.
Oh, like, damn! That sounds like a little bit like some AI stuff, man. Like a little bit, you know?
Yeah,
I mean?
It was kind of like that. I mean, it would just recognize like keywords and stuff, and it wouldn't like think or anything like that. But anyway, that's just kind of a random example. But ended up, you know, I think my first major exposure, I guess, to working on apps in a real working environment was I worked very early on the team, the Words with Friends team. If you remember Words with Friends.
Oh, no way, man. Dude, I had my whole school addicted to that fucking game, man. You guys were on that?
That was kind of my first real sort of like professional work experience doing an internship there, and sort of like taste of San Francisco, taste of working in Silicon Valley. And then I was hooked from then. And then, you know, knew I had to come back, and that's how I ended up living and working here full time for the last 10 plus years.
Damn, That's awesome, man. That's such an insane background. It's just it kind of gives me like you and your family just very futuristic. You guys are just all about, you know, tech and engineer. It seems like a very clear path for you, and it's just pretty cool to hear. But last question before we jump into the meat and bones, would love to know the story on how you first discovered crypto and what about the crypto space made you want to stay here?
Yeah. It's a good question. basically, you know, I think like most people heard about crypto through the various kind of waves that popped up. I think first time was in college, probably 2010. And then subsequently 2013, 2014, and just kind of always heard about it, but never really understood it or I was attracted enough to kind of get into it. Actually, one of my very early roommates in San Francisco was an early Coinbase employee, and he was always, he's always trying to pay me rent in Bitcoin. And I was like, yeah, I don't want that. Actually, worst mistake of my entire life. But anyway, so kind of was like just hearing about it. And then what did it for me eventually was I did my tour of duty, so to speak, at Twitter from 2013 to 2017. In 2017, I was basically, I think like most folks can relate, like just getting a little bit burned out from the web 2.0 grind, even to the point where I was like, oh man, is programming really for me long term and all of that. And then ended up getting caught up in, you know, the 2017 ICO wave, which was just really interesting for me because there was a lot of these white papers floating around, and these white papers had a lot of very illustrative language around what the world could look like if reimagining Twitter as a decentralized app or Uber as a decentralized app. And I felt like, I was like, whoa, this is like a kind of really flipped the model, like the client server model on its head. And it was a brand new way of thinking about these consumer apps that I was really familiar with. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that initial kind of like spark again to like really dive deep and learn. And yeah, basically, long story short, eventually found myself spending more time reading those white papers at work than actually working. And so I was like, okay, this is probably a signal for me to just dive in and go full time on this. And I didn't have anything lined up or anything. I just knew that I wanted to immerse myself in this stuff full time. And so quit my job. Through a number of explorations, basically figured out that these like pie in the sky visions for like decentralized Twitter, decentralized Uber, like wait, is way too early essentially.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, so if those are too early, then I should try to find like an infrastructure project. Stumbled upon 0x, which was kind of an interesting hybrid actually of like infrastructure project, but also had some consumer app facing aspects to it because they're building trading apps.
Mm-hmm.
And had a couple of mutual friends, actually my buddy who I was referencing earlier, who was my roommate, who's early Coinbase guy. He knew the 0x guys pretty well, made the connection. And that was it. That was sort of the initial dive.
Yeah. I love that you took what you initially loved about, you know, apps and social media, and just really flipped it on its head and thinking about decentralization and just really digging deep. Instead of going that route, you found this new world of, decentralization and things like that. And it just, just went down that road.
Yeah. Because Twitter especially was actually had a lot of interesting history with decentralization actually, or because earlier on it really was, I think the initial spark of Twitter, there's a lot of initial spark around Twitter around third-party developers building different types of clients and experiences around this basically shared and open database of tweets. And over time, because of the nature of Twitter being a for-profit company, they eventually, there was a lot of controversy of them like actually shutting down their like third-party APIs and killing off all of these external clients because they had to force more eyeballs to the main app because of the advertising-driven business model. And so they're like, oh, we can't have people viewing tweets in all these random places. They have to just, we have to drive them into this one place because that's how we get more ad impressions. And yeah, a lot of people actually cite that, including Jack Dorsey himself. I think there was one statement he made where he's like, Twitter should have been a protocol and not like a for-profit company. And there was just a lot of really interesting parallels there with sort of the vision for crypto and what that eventually became Web3, et cetera. And so, yeah, I found that really interesting.
Damn. Yeah, no, there was a lot of connections between that world and your world. I didn't know that history of Twitter. That was pretty crazy. Like from what I've known is that Twitter has always been, you know, ads and just really wanted people to get to just stay on this platform. I had no clue about that whole that's actually great. I have to look into that. That's a very interesting history because I feel like they were also a little bit too early, right?
Yeah, a bit. I think a little bit too early in the sense that I think they caught this initial like magic and vibe from what is literally what's happening now in crypto, where you have like an open permissionless database of people communicating with each other in tweets, and then people were sort of then taking that and imagining all these other applications on top. It's actually quite similar to what's happening with Farcaster now.
Yeah.
If you're familiar. And then, eventually had to go down this path of ads monetization just because that was the meta, so to speak.
Yeah.
I guess Elon's trying to turn around now. So they're kind of having this third kind of chapter, which is quite interesting. But
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, man. But all right, man. So let's dig into what everyone wants to hear about, and that is Phantom Wallet. But I want to go into the history. Take me back to day zero. What led you into this idea on creating Phantom, and what problems or goals were you trying to solve or accomplish with them?
Yeah, so I talked a little bit about how I ended up from Twitter to ZeroX. Basically, at ZeroX, had the really awesome opportunity to work on a number of pretty widely used crypto apps or dApps. We were sort of on that ground floor of figuring out what DeFi was really. And we were all just kind of figuring out together as like an ecosystem. And so there was like the folks working on decentralized exchanges, folks working on wallets, folks working on other types of infra. Stuff started to pop off. It's like 2020 DeFi summer on Ethereum. And I think at that point we were building this application called Matcha.xyz, which is a centralized exchange aggregator on Ethereum. And once you start getting to the point where you are trying to seriously like grow a crypto app, you start to like analyze funnels, quote unquote. So like you're trying to figure out what point a user gets onto your app and how do you get them to like make a critical action, which is like a trade or like onboard, for example. And then when you actually start to analyze those things, you end up realizing that basically all of those funnels are constricted by MetaMask. All of your destiny as an application is controlled by how well MetaMask can do its job. So even like, if you think about using Uniswap for the first time, when you onboard, you have to download MetaMask.
Yeah.
When you're making a trade, which is a critical action for them, you know, the final boss is like the MetaMask pop-up.
Yeah.
And I think we just became pretty frustrated that basically after 3 plus years of working on this stuff, like the wallet side of the house of the ecosystem was just not doing it. And there had been actually a lot of attempts at like other types of wallets, but no one had really been able to crack the nut of doing a better job than MetaMask and also getting more distribution and users. And so we felt like the place that we could really the highest leverage place that we can apply ourselves to actually grow the entire crypto ecosystem was by fixing this wallet problem, which no one seemed to be able to fix yet. So that's how we decided that we want to create a MetaMask competitor, basically, to start. But the other major insight that we had was that the world was moving more and more multi-chain. And so from 2017 and 2020, it really was like a laughed at notion that someone would be using something that's not Ethereum, but both a user and a developer. And pretty much you were laughed out of the room if you suggested to use something that was not Ethereum.
How come though? Like what was Ethereum at that time just God tier?
Yeah, I mean it still very much is in terms of all of the sort of core metrics in terms of developer activity, users, etc. But it was just I think there was a lot of obviously there's a lot of tribalism in crypto.
Yeah,
there's a lot of maximalism.
I was about to say that, man, because there's obviously better. Like I was going to say, or there's better wallets out there. There was better, coins to do or better blockchains to do other things on. And I feel like, but no one was using it. For example, like MetaMask, there was already other competitors that I think the UI was better than MetaMask and much more easier and sleek, but no one was using it. You know what I mean? And kind of the same thing with like, not the same thing with like blockchains or crypto coins and things like that, but like, for example, ETH was like a whole God tier kind of thing but obviously Solana was much easier to use, much cheaper and faster. It just confuses me. You know what I mean? Like, why wouldn't one? I get that it's going to be like an and instead of an or thing, but I guess there's just different use cases for both. But yeah,
I think the main argument was like the decentralization aspect. It's like nothing else is as decentralized as Ethereum. And therefore, if you're building your business or you're using another blockchain, you're basically, you're at risk. You're at risk for losing your money. You're at risk of killing your business, et cetera. So, I think that was the main argument. And then actually what really changed everyone's perception, at least changed my perception, was the rise of Binance Smart Chain. And that was basically in the summer of 2020. That's when they first came on the map and just started putting up huge numbers immediately. Obviously because of the connection with Binance. And so, but that really showed everyone, kind of like pulled back the veil a bit and showed everyone, hey, there's actually a demand for fast and cheap block space, which intuitively sounds obvious, but and then especially if you couple that with the distribution power of like Binance, for example, you could actually spur a whole new ecosystem. And everyone was actually pretty shocked when that happened. And even 0x themselves internally were like, oh, okay, this needs to be taken seriously. And Binance Smart Chain was actually the first non-Ethereum mainnet chain that they kind of added support for. And so we saw that happen early on. We're like, okay, this is obviously going to be a trend. Binance Smart Chain, we didn't feel like was it in terms of like the end all be all of fast and cheap blockchains. And so we kind of combined this multi-chain insight with this other insight of like, hey, wallets are still broken. Wallets are actually like bottlenecking everyone. And then we decided that we were going to create a multi-chain MetaMask competitor. And how we were going to do that was, instead of trying to compete with MetaMask head on, we are going to essentially shortcut them or circumvent them by rerunning the MetaMask playbook, so to speak, but on a new and rising ecosystem. Just taking a huge bet on a rising ecosystem, and we ended up choosing Solana as our horse, and that was basically very very early 2021, late 2020, that's how we ended up choosing on Solana initially. And obviously fast forward, and that bet paid off tremendously.
Huge. Yeah.
And we yeah, spent a couple of years just going really, really, really heads down on just staying alive on Solana because there's so much activity, hundreds of thousands of new users a week with just three of us at first. It was quite intense because there's a lot of, with a lot of users comes a lot of obviously responsibility.
I feel like we were kind of stale, you know what I mean? As in terms of wallets, I hate to admit it, but I don't like this about myself, but I'm always like when Facebook came out, I was just like hardcore fucking MySpace. You know what I mean? Like I love MySpace. I'm dedicated in MySpace. And then like I started seeing, and then I switched over, you know, that kind of broke me into like, hey, you know, I always try new things. And then when I first saw Phantom come out, I was like, I'm sticking with MetaMask. I'm just gonna stick with MetaMask. I was being a little arrogant. So I'm gonna stick with MetaMask. They've always, you know, they've done me right, blah, 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 blah. And I switched, I randomly one day I was so fucking so mad at using MetaMask because I kept glitching out on me. My browser screen would not load up. It was just a whole bunch of troubles that I was having on there. And that frustration really just immediately led me down to downloading Phantom. And I gotta tell you my experience. Day one, I was just like, fuck, dude, I am an idiot. Like, I should have been using this. And I'm not trying to talk bad on MetaMask. I still use MetaMask. It's still a great wallet. But like, as in terms for like me bringing someone on or the UI of Phantom, it's just so much easier, man. So much easier. Way cleaner. It just looks better for me as in everything, man. So I just wanted to tell you my experience the first time I stopped being arrogant and switched over to Phantom, man. It was a pretty cool moment for me.
I really appreciate that, and that's always really awesome to hear to this day individual people talking about enjoying their experience with Phantom or even their first crypto experience being like using Phantom.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. Oh, sorry. I would not call it I would not call it arrogance. Like it's definitely a very natural thing, especially with financial products. They're very sticky in that there's a huge trust and brand element to financial products where basically the longer that you're alive, the more compounding advantage you grow because of this trust and brand that you're growing. And you know, MetaMask never had a major incident. They never, you know, they have always been good enough for a lot of folks. And so, I wouldn't call it arrogance. I would just call it it's quite natural, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Made me feel a little bit better. but dude, you know, kind of talking about that, one of the really cool, in my opinion, you know, this is one of the really cool things about what your team does at Phantom is how well connected and grounded you guys are with the whole Web3 community. I mean, that was probably one of the biggest reasons why I even considered it, because of how well you guys integrated yourself within the culture, you know what I mean? Within the culture, within the community, and really just, how do I say this? Making the users feel very seen. You know what I mean? Like when you talk to MetaMask or try to talk to these other wallets and stuff like that, you know, they don't get a reply back. You don't get a DM back. You don't see any of those things or those people really having fun with you on the timeline. So I want to ask, how important is it for you guys to build a strong community around Phantom? And what are you guys doing to grow and maintain that?
Yeah, extremely important. I think one thing that people don't realize, they talk about user experience, UI, we need to focus on making the app super usable, shiny, et cetera. That is all true. And that's all table stakes stuff. Mm-hmm. When you really are in a very user-centric mindset, you think about the user basically every step of the way. And the user experience doesn't just start and end with the user opening up the app and closing it. It's actually all areas. And so the education leading up into downloading the app, the customer support, the the way that we're interacting with folks on the timeline, like you said, and all those things, like that's the complete holistic user journey that we just want to make sure that we're helping folks every step of the way. And so, yeah, it's really important to not only completely nail what's in the app, but also completely nail everything that exists outside of it. Mm-hmm. And so, community is really important. Keeping people safe is really important. That's why we do a lot of user education on Twitter to help guide folks through what's going on, tips and tricks to keep people safe, that type of thing. And basically, if you're not going to reply to someone, a scammer will, essentially, on Twitter. Yeah. And so,
it's huge out there, man. And everybody notices it, man. There's a wallet that everyone talks about, and it's definitely Phantom, just because I see you guys everywhere, man. And you guys are killing it with you guys are hopping on Spaces, education. I see that education is very important for you guys. I've learned a few things here and there from reading the posts that you guys post. Someone from anybody can learn from what you guys are posting. Beginners, noobs, experts, whatever, but everybody can learn something new from what you guys have posted. And, I've only been in here for 2-3 years and, I still got a lot to learn. So Phantom doing that, shout out to you guys and the team for that. It's just a very huge, makes me feel comfortable bringing new people into the space and leading them towards Phantom. Like, hey, I may not necessarily have the time or be able to explain it well. Go to Phantom. Maybe not necessarily go to their wallet, but go to their website, check it out, read what they're doing. Because you guys really lay it out for there. I just want to thank you guys for that, man.
Yeah, no worries.
Go ahead.
Thanks. No, go for it.
Yeah. So, everyone knows what Phantom Wallet is, but would love to get into what separate you guys from all the other wallets out there today, like the futures, the UI, definitely the security. Basically, what do you guys have that the other guys don't?
That's a good question. I'd say, one, we have, like I mentioned before, that very user-centric mindset, which expands past just UI UX and just raw features, because that's just a bit of a rat race, essentially, where you release a feature, another wallet just copies the feature. If you look at screenshots of all the apps out there, basically everything just looks like Phantom nowadays. And so but what people don't realize is that, like I said, like a lot of the advantage and a lot of really doing right by users is stuff that we're doing outside of the app. Like one example is customer support. I always bring this up, and it's a very unsexy thing, but what is up with customer support in crypto? It's actually insanely negligent, actually, where people are just saying like, hey, hop into Discord to get supported. And do you know what happens in those discords? People are in some sort of crisis mode. Either they just had lost some money, or, they're trying to make money and they can't for some reason. And they are being blocked by some problem. They're usually frantic. They hop into Discord. They're trying to get the attention of a mod or support. Someone replies to them like, okay, great. They send them a link or whatever, and then they get fished in that moment because that was a scammer. Yeah. And they didn't know better, because everyone thinks they're above that happening to them, but they're really not, because they're really not. Yeah. And so it's just insane to me that companies are willingly kind of leading their users into this very dangerous path by doing that, instead of using customer support techniques from Web 2.0, so to speak, that are very well known and well oiled at this point. And so, that's something that I'm really proud of that we do, is have a very well oiled customer support team that has very, very, it sounds obvious, but very basic things like goals and metrics. Yes. Like hey, like we're going to goal on decreasing the time to respond to messages, and like, or we're going to goal on decreasing the number of these incidents related to this, et cetera. And, yeah, just taking it seriously. I think that's one, you know, one thing that I'm really proud of. But yeah, I mean, in general, we really want to transform Phantom into just a tool that you use to interact with crypto, to a place that you're really using to discover new things to do as a user. As a business on crypto, it's a tool for you to help grow your business, get more exposure, reach new users and things like that. That type of thing is completely missing from crypto at the moment.
That's huge. No, I think that's huge, man. The customer support thing was a huge thing for me. And I kind of want to take it back and ask, like, do you think other wallets had like that kind of first mover's advantage? You know what I mean? They kind of, they were popular. They were the first, not necessarily the first ones there, but the first ones to get very well known. And they kind of just not really doing anything as much anymore to really support their customers and their users and things like that. Are you kind of seeing that within this space?
I mean, definitely there's definitely a first mover advantage thing going on. I think that's going back to my story about how we decided, hey, we're not going to compete directly with MetaMask. That was part of the insight, basically, was that, it's not enough to just come up and be like, hey, we're just going to create a better UI UX. A lot of wallets tried that. A lot of wallets are still trying that. And there's basically a humongous graveyard of people who are like, we're just going to have a nice UI. And turns out that's not really a strategy. Because the first mover advantage is quite strong. Unfortunately, the flip side of that dynamic is that the first mover advantage is so strong, it doesn't actually force those wallets to innovate or compete, really. And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg type of situation, but I think
that's where you guys come in, huh?
Exactly. I think we're really trying to push the envelope and put some pressure on the Ethereum side of the house to get their shit together a little bit.
Jesus Christ, dude, talk. I want to like kind of highlight the features that you guys have within Phantom that I personally absolutely love. Obviously, when I go to the internet side, the browser side, it has all of the credible sites for me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That for me is fucking huge, just because I'm always like sweating my ass off thinking about if I'm clicking the wrong link or putting in the wrong website, etc. Also want a big shout out to the wallet simulator. Oh my God, man. I also love that thing too, man. You guys are keeping us so safe, man. It's just I just really wanted to highlight that because if you guys don't know, and I know for a fact other wallets don't do that as well as Phantom to keep us safe, not clicking random ass websites that we don't know, and using the simulator, like I said.
Yeah, totally. I think thanks for calling those things out, because I think both of them have a lot to do with user safety, which is just really important. Just one meta comment before diving into those two. Basically, I think way too many people in this space are very focused on onboarding the next billion users. That's a very common thing to say. Hey, we're going to onboard the mainstream, et cetera. I think basically it doesn't really matter if you onboard a billion people if 75% of those end up getting phished or scammed. Actually, that did way more damage than good, because those people are never going to use crypto again, essentially. And so we have a lot of work to do in the industry to make sure that this environment that we're like trying very hard to get people to onboard to is safe for forcing a lot of people through this funnel. And so, a lot of the work we do is to keep users safe for that reason. The Explore tab that you're talking about with all of the links in there.
Yeah.
That's super important.
Huge.
Yeah. Especially, you know, recently as earlier this week, there was the huge Jupiter airdrop event. And
yeah,
I'm sure if you were on Twitter, you saw that there was a humongous army of fake links and all this. I think, I don't know.
I almost fell for one, dude. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw, but even Blockworks posted this article about Jupiter airdrop and they themselves posted the wrong link,
which
Phantom was actually able to proactively block. Yeah, I mean, it's a huge problem. The way that you discover these apps essentially is through Twitter and Discord. Mm-hmm. And like I said, those products are hotbeds for scammers. And so
they're fucking landmines everywhere, man.
Exactly. And you know, the reason that they keep doing it is because it is a very profitable and net positive thing for them. And they're catching a lot of victims. And so so having all that stuff in app really helps keep people safe, making sure things are verified, et cetera. And then on the flip side of that is also helping apps get more exposure for their users as well. And giving users more stuff to do and find in crypto. So
man, it's a huge thing. I wish that back in, I think it was early 2021, me and my buddy I got my buddy into NFTs and crypto, and we were just using MetaMask, and we're mostly mobile, you know, we're just on mobile mostly. And unfortunately my buddy got scammed from all of his assets, a few thousand bucks. And it was all through the app, you know what I mean? There was nothing to really, it was still early days, you know what I mean? We were still walking around like the wild, wild west. And kind of like what you said, man, it did a lot more damage onboarding him because he fucking hates it. You know, I understand it though. Yeah. I can't blame him for it. You know what I mean? And it just fucking, it just sucks. Cause there was nothing that anybody could do, you know what I mean? And we just kind of have to move forward from that, man. I wanted to move on and ask you, man. So I know you touched on a little bit about it, but I would love to get to like your full kind of perspective on it, on kind of on the future of this topic too. So Phantom Wallet was used mainly for Solana at first. Now you guys have added ETH, Polygon, and as a recent Bitcoin. Why go the multi-chain route? Why not just stick with just Solana? Would love to hear the bigger picture in your head that goes on.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I guess just kind of referencing back to the initial story around why we even started Phantom in the first place, it really was about that long game of taking down MetaMask. And so we really wanted to, because MetaMask still to this day is a major bottleneck for the entire industry. And so that's the sort of the long game for us. Actually, not even long game, but I think that's the medium game for us.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah.
Don't get me wrong, Solana basically is our home. It's our core user base. We believe actually that Solana is going to be, like, we believe in crypto mass adoption. And in order for that mass adoption to happen, the underlying technology needs to be fast and cheap and scalable. And we genuinely believe that Solana is that solution. That's one of the reasons why we decided to even build on Solana in the first place. Nice. And before anyone was doing that, like late 2020. Yeah. And so we're always going to be doubling down on Solana. We're always going to be prioritizing Solana, frankly, and with everything that we do. And we kind of view multi-chain in a couple of different ways. One, we love to add chains that that Solana people also like to use. So Solana folks, there's a subset of them that only use Solana, but a lot of them also use other app chains. A lot of them love to explore Bitcoin ordinals. A lot of them love to explore things on Ethereum as well. And so adding support for those chains is actually adding new features for that our users want. So that's the first thing.
Keeping them there, huh? Too, just like, because why would you go anywhere else if everything is just there, one stop shop?
Exactly. And it also really helps just grow Solana, because it makes it easier for like, hey, a new ETH person is like, I heard about Solana's the new hot shit. Let me check it out. They are there. They're like, oh awesome. Oh, there's support for ETH as well. Like, let me just move my entire life over here, basically, yeah. Crypto life. And so, yeah. And so, yeah, it really helps bring new assets and liquidity to Solana as well. But yeah, longer term, I think people are going to realize that it actually doesn't make any sense for wallets to be like mono chain. Very similar to how exchanges today, no one really bats an eye that an exchange has support for multiple chains and multiple assets. That's just sort of a given.
Yeah.
But that actually was not always the case. Back in the day, Coinbase only had support for Bitcoin. And they were very deep in the Bitcoin community.
Wow.
Because that was the only thing around.
Yeah, true, yeah.
And then in 2016, they were like, hey, Ethereum's new kid on the block. We need to evolve, basically, to become multi-chain, essentially. They were multi-chain before multi-chain was a thing. And they got a lot of hate for that. They wow. It was actually a much smaller community back then. A lot of people knew each other, and there were even death threats and that sort of
wow.
thing. And so they made this very convicted bet that exchanges are going to become multi-chain, and obviously that's what happened. No one even thinks that. Actually, it's pretty like, if you were to think about an exchange that only supports Bitcoin, it's kind of, everyone would be like, what?
Yeah, just Bitcoin? Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lie, man. I was a little shocked. I mean, I knew that like Coinbase and these other marketplaces only supported Bitcoin at first. And once they went, I didn't know that they faced that kind of a backlash just for supporting another chain or another crypto. And now that's just kind of like I said, man, I've only been into crypto and NFTs for like 2-3 years now. And hearing this stuff is just, or seeing this stuff that I use now, I'm just like, isn't that supposed to just always be like that? Like, isn't that like just the norm? That's very shocking to me that back then it was just like pitchforks and fucking axes is ready to kill someone because they added another crypto on there.
Yeah. And
that's,
I mean,
wild.
And so the reason I say that is I basically, wallets, I truly believe are going to follow the same exact path where, okay. It's just going to be commonplace and just the standard that you use a wallet and it grants you access to all of the major apps and tokens and things that you want to do on chain.
So,
and, yeah.
So when you see like the similar, I love history. I love to see like patterns within history. Do you see like the similar patterns within like crypto ICO days and like NFTs and Web3, kind of like the similar pattern where you were explaining like multi-chain with just marketplaces and now wallets are doing it. You know what I mean? Like, do you see the same thing, same patterns? Like, what's your perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, yeah, obviously, as people say, history doesn't repeat itself, but it often rhymes or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that, yeah, a lot of very similar trends appear time after time. I think DeFi summer is something that happened on Ethereum that you're seeing happen again on Solana.
Yeah.
I think that subsequent NFT boom on Ethereum, that's something that you may see again on Solana. Mm-hmm. As well, coming up.
That's what I'm seeing. Like, there's a lot of similar patterns. There's similar, maybe not the same exact NFT, maybe not the same crypto, but the cycles, the vibes, the sentiments, the pump, you know, all those kind of things is just like very similar patterns. I'm glad that you're seeing it too. I'm not going fucking totally insane because, like, you know, I'm a noob. I consider myself a noob in this space, and but I'm noticing patterns. You know what I mean? It's really cool that you said that as well, man. But So I just want to ask too, man, as everyone knows, there's always be like bumps along the way, especially building as big as something like Phantom. So with that being said, what are some of the most significant challenges Phantom had to face, and how did you guys overcome it? What lessons were learned when you jumped through those hurdles?
It's a good question. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a couple. I mean, the whole meteoric rise type of thing that happened in 2021 was quite difficult. Specifically because essentially our users, and we already talked about this a lot, but our users became a humongous target for scammers and phishers. And basically we quickly learned that's not a one-time fix-it solution. It's just a cat and mouse game that you need to be playing on a continuous basis. And so, just learning the lesson of like, hey, we have a lot of responsibility for protecting these users. Building a very strong security arm within Phantom, to be able to handle that. So that was definitely one. We had a pretty unfortunate incident in 2022 where there was one of our peer wallets, this wallet called Slow on Solana, basically had like a major kind of incident and breach where they were leaking people's secret recovery phrases.
Jesus.
And that was quite a difficult thing to navigate because a lot of people were actually just sharing their secret recovery phrase between Phantom and Slow. And and from the first hour, 2 hours of the incident, you just see Phantom users just getting drained out of nowhere. Oh. Like, what's going on? Fuck. And it was a very intense moment. It turned out it was not our fault, and it was actually the fault of Slow, but it was actually quite a difficult thing to navigate and even prove because it was a lot of finger pointing. And you can't really necessarily prove who leaked the key material or whatever. Although actually we ended up the community actually banded together and ended up being able to prove it was Slow. So that was awesome. But that was
nice.
That was a 72-hour, very intense 72 hours of pure like adrenaline that was just crazy. So that was quite difficult. And actually just as recently as the last couple of weeks, Solana has been having humongous growth spurt related to Jupiter airdrop and other airdrops. And that's also been quite difficult because our back-end systems and just engineering systems are just hitting unprecedented levels of activity.
Yeah. Basically, it's a kind of a good problem to have, huh?
It's extremely intense. And everyone's out to get us. There's DDoS attacks.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's like, this is
Jesus
like...
Jesus Christ.
And like the types of like RPS we're hitting, like requests per second, this is like stuff that like, you know, major Web 2.0 tech companies like Twitter and Facebook kind of hit, like,
not, someone's not liking. Someone's not liking what you guys are doing out there, man. Someone's not liking it.
Who knows? But like, but it's definitely, that's also definitely like, that's another cat and mouse game. And so,
Man, it's definitely some huge hurdles that you had to go through, and I'm glad that you guys kept fucking trucking on. You know, you guys are still here. You guys are still kicking. You know, it's very easy to throw up your hands and say fuck it and give up, but you guys kept trucking. You guys are still here and you guys are still getting better, man. One of the things that I also wanted to point out too is how upfront Phantom is that you guys are experiencing issues or having problems or something like that. It's very how do I say this again? It makes me feel very comfortable because I know that you guys notice it, acknowledging it, and taking action on it. It sounds so simple, but like other people just don't do it. Other wallets just don't do that. And they just kind of just let it ride and let us, which is the worst thing they could do, let us make our own opinions and make our own assumptions and things like that.
Yeah.
Just want to give you guys a huge shout out to you guys for doing that, man. It's a huge thing for me, I think. And it, obviously for the community too, because they love seeing it. I see it in the comments. You know, people are loving the updates, man.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, it all comes back to just trying to keep people safe.
Yeah.
And staying ahead of scammers. Like, if we're not communicating, someone else is going to get in there and try to take advantage of the moment.
Definitely. Yeah. So I know we only got not too long here, so I want to get through these last few. I want to get into what Phantom is doing right now. What are you guys cooking up in the kitchen, and what is the main focus that you guys are focusing on right now?
Yeah, we are, like I said, really doubling down on Solana. You know, really just making sure that, you know, Solana's having a moment.
And yeah.
We really need to make sure that Solana shines for this moment, because these moments don't always come around. And so, you know, we've been preparing for this the last couple of years, basically. And so we're really doubling down on Solana, making sure that when folks are checking out Solana apps for the first time, that they're having a really great first time user experience, because the first impression really matters. We're keeping them safe, like I said, and helping them discover. Usually people come in and they have one intent, like they're going to go to Magic Eden or they're going to claim this airdrop. But then making sure that after that point, they're well taken care of and they are discovering new things to do as well, because that helps the entire ecosystem.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're all about doubling down on Solana and just making sure that that ecosystem is growing as much as possible. Because like I said, we really believe that Solana's technology is going to be one of the keys for mass adoption in the future. So
I think so too, man. And honestly, I wasn't a huge believer at first, just because of all the noise and bells and things that were going on out there. But you know, one of the things that I've learned is if you don't fucking try it, you can't really talk shit. I've tried it. This is some DJ shit I'm about to say. Like, it is so easy to trade and meme coins on Phantom and make some DJ plays on there, man. You know, wherever I go and make some fast transactions, fast things in and out, and some degens, so I go to Phantom, man. It's just the place to be. It's either long-term things going on or short-term. I use Phantom, and it's a great wallet, man. Last question, my guy, and I'll let you go. But what do you we've obviously talked about it, but how does it feel at seeing Solana have their moment, have the shining light on them now? After all the fucking bullshit that they went through, how does it just feel just knowing that you guys just made the fucking right bet, seeing Solana and the NFT project just absolutely flourish?
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely vindicating. It's amazing to be able to, yeah, be standing kind of side by side with the rest of the ecosystem who really doubled down, tripled down through a lot of very difficult times, obviously FTX,
yeah.
And all that. But I think what I saw through those moments is that Solana has like a very genuine core of community, mm-hmm. not only from the user side, but also from the developer side. Mm-hmm. And so that really gave me enough conviction to be like, hey, we're really sticking this out. We're really doubling down the ecosystem. And yeah, it's amazing. But at the same time, it's a very intense moment right now, because we're basically, it's not time to celebrate yet, basically. Like for me, actually, the prevailing feeling is like, what is the prevailing feeling? It's a lot of anxiety, actually, just mm-hmm. of like,
okay, you got to keep the ball rolling, the tires going. Yeah,
exactly. Like this is actually not a moment to celebrate yet. We have to like press down on this.
Ooh, yeah.
And then manage, exactly. And really just close the door, essentially, so to speak. And because, yeah, like, this is just the start. I mean, just getting in the spotlight of crypto Twitter is one thing, but then actually parlaying that into the actual mainstream adoption stuff, which we've been talking about forever, that's a whole nother gear. So I think a lot of it, actually my prevailing feeling is a lot of anxiety around like, all right, this is the moment. Like, let's like actually
let's do it. Let's fucking get it. Yeah. Oh man. Dude, just that little, oh man, that little section that we just talked about, man, had me pumped, man. I'm fucking ready, man. It's, you know, I've not married my bags this round. You know, I'm exploring different chains, man. Solana is obviously one of my favorite other chains that I've exploring, and I'm fucking ready, dude. I'm just stoked. I'm stoked for you guys, man. I'm stoked for Phantom. I'm glad that you guys had such a rising moment too, man. Yeah, everybody, the fucking whole sentiment, I don't know, you probably know, you guys pay attention very well. You guys have, I think, in my opinion, one of the best sentiments out there as far as a crypto wallet goes. I mean, yeah, kudos to you guys, man, you know. But that's all I had for you today, my man. I wanted to thank you again for hopping on the show, letting us get to know you more, telling us about Phantom and your overall perspective on Souls and the whole entire ecosystem. But before we sign off, please let people know where to find more information about you and Phantom, just in case people are interested in making or creating their first wallet or thinking about making that transition over.
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much for having me on. It was a pleasure. And it's always, like I said, it's always awesome to hear about individual user having a great experience with Phantom and with crypto in general. So thanks for having me on. For those of you who haven't tried Phantom yet or want to learn more, you can find our website at phantom.app. And you can find us on Twitter at Phantom. Or feel free to personally reach out to myself as well. I'm at B Chilman on Twitter. Looking forward to onboarding some new users to Solana.
Oh yeah, man. And it's actually pretty insane. Before, I wanted to mention, I saw the stats. It was like 1.2 million in like 2020. Now you guys are up to like 2.7 now, like 2.5. It's pretty fucking insane, man. It's, you guys are just rising and rising and rising and rising, man. It's,
yeah, we actually just we just hit 3 million installs on
Jesus.
Yeah, so woo! If you check out the Chrome like listing, it just hit 3 million actually this morning.
Dude, that's what's up. Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
I hope you have a great rest of your day, man, and thank you for the opportunity, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Have a great weekend, man.
You too, man.
All right, peace.